It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm joined in person in my dining room by Matt Fortuna. We're fresh off Notre Dame's first open practice of training camp. I'm not sure there was a ton to take away from it. It feels more like a team that has some developing that needs to still happen.
Yeah, I hopped in the car and drove over here today, Pete, obviously to see you, one, yeah. But two, because today was supposed to be the day where we're going to find out who the starting quarterback was after a full open of the media scrimmage. And I figured that was doubly true when I think last night Notre Dame emails, you know, Tommy Rees and offensive players were initially scheduled to speak today to the media, and Notre Dame replaced that with Brian Kelly, which when that happens, there's usually an announcement of some kind, be it in form of starting quarterback, captains. We got news on both of those today from Brian Kelly, neither of which were actual hardcore answers that we can give our loyal listeners today. But as you said, as a couple reporters said while walking out of that practice, would be a really weird day to name Jack Cohn Notre Dame starting quarterback, considering most of the first team reps that we got to see were handled by Drew Pine. So not terribly surprised Brian Kelly went the way he did when we finally spoke to him.
Yeah, and look, it wasn't a day that either Jack Cohn or Drew Pine looked that great, honestly. When we watched the scrimmage, there wasn't a lot of moving the ball up and down the field. Drew Pine threw a couple picks. One was hit Maris Liefau in the face on fourth down that then he returned for a hypothetical touchdown. So it, I don't know. There's just a lot about this team, and this is not a criticism by any stretch. I think it's just a reality of the roster that they have back, the inexperience that they have at some important positions. There, and Brian Kelly references before camp started, and then I think we sort of forget about it, but like they need all 4 weeks badly. This is one of those teams that is going to probably not only need all of August to develop, it's probably going to need into the season to develop, which is, I think, one of the reasons that game at Florida State is just a little bit dicey.
Yeah, I don't know if I go dicey just yet, but I agree with everything else you said because, I mean, just, you know, when we're up and they went indoors and outdoors today, so we were either in basically bleachers outside or we were in the balcony concourse overlooking them warming up inside, just so the listeners have an understanding of where we're coming from. And you're trying to chart everyone on the field for, you know, every formation, every competitive situation. And, I mean, you're much better versed in this than I am. I had a hard time keeping up with defense because there were so many different players playing pretty much at every level of the defense. It's going to be different. I mean, it's hard to like project a starting 11 based off like what we've seen so far. And Brian Kelly said today and has said repeatedly, like, we're still talking, me and Marcus Freeman, about, you know, how do we get our best 11 guys out there almost independent of position. But yeah, there were times today where, you know, I thought the first team defense, at least as it was presented to us, looked better than the first team offense. Yeah. And when the second teamers came on, it looked like the offense had their way. And we still don't know who's going to be starting and sitting on each of those respective units come 3 weeks from now. So still a lot of questions about to learn about this team.
And I mean, the fact that the starting defense was better than the offense has to include Blake Fisher out for concussion protocol, but Myron Tagovailoa most also not there following the death of his father. He's home in Hawaii. If you added both of those guys in, I think that would only the defense.
Cancel each other out. Yeah.
I think the defense would actually be further ahead than already was. So that was a little surprising to me. I thought that, you know, one part of the defense that I watched a little bit was like, were they going to be able to get something from Jordan Botello or Isaiah Foskey? And I would, Notre Dame's offensive line did a pretty good job on both of them. To the point Foskey was sort of getting pleaded with from Mike Elston about, like, come on, we need something from you. So that, Kane Madden was running with the first team, which was not something we saw on Saturday. This was an eventuality. Kevin Austin was running with the first team, which was not something we saw on Saturday. Again, that was just a matter of time. Even if the offense was not great, the development of Kevin Austin to flash a little bit is a real positive, because if you can get him, and then Braden Lindsay did some good things today too, where he sort of, I think it was over Clarence Lewis, where he just sort of like jumped over him and made a physical one-on-one catch and scored on it. Also was kind of giving Brian Kelly some crap and taking it, but it's just like, you don't get to do that if you're not producing. The head coach doesn't want to mess around with you that way unless he knows that you're good. So I thought that, even if the offense on the first team didn't look that great, there were some positive signs at the receiver position, which they need badly.
Yeah, that was about as jovial of a Brian as a practice and post-practice Brian Kelly as I can remember seeing. Just hands-on, joking with the players. Him and Braden Lindsay went at it back and forth a little bit in good nature, and Brian Kelly talked a lot about him afterward and how it's all clicking for him mentally, physically. There don't seem to be any hiccups there. Kevin Austin, you mentioned. And I think he mentioned Joe Wilkins as well under the what was the word, transformational?
Yes.
It just what this receiver group can be. He has read, he said all of our angry emails, they're probably our listeners' angry emails, downfield passing, downfield passing, downfield passing.
It's definitely in our mentions.
That's definitely in our mentions, that's for sure. They took some shots, at least when we were watching them today. I mean, seeing Braden Lindsay go up and take away essentially a pick was something that I'm not sure we would have seen at this time a year ago from him. So maybe you feel a little bit better about that position core as you move forward. But, we're still, not to keep harping on the quarterbacks, the way Brian Kelly, it sounded like he almost basically Jack Oates, their starting quarterback, without being ready to put that distinction on just yet.
He basically said that on Saturday and then kind of repeated it today, but the emphasis was maybe a little bit off. But it was like we said, like this today, you can't name starter today if it's Jack Cohn when you have Drew Pine take the starter's reps in practice. That just doesn't make any sense. I thought that I would see a little bit more from our amateur eyes, like a separation between the two of them. And the separation at quarterback, I thought more was between Buckner and then Cohn and Pine together. I couldn't sit there and tell you, like, oh, Jack Cohn just absolutely outperformed Drew Pine today. But based on everything you hear when you talk to people in the Goog, or even you sort of parse Brian Kelly's comments, it feels like it's moving that way, but like we just haven't seen evidence ourselves.
No, and he said, we're really, really close. We'll have it for you early next week. And I'm trying to remember how this has been handled in past years. It's been so long because Ian Book was there for so long. Like, I feel like, he obviously tells those guys, or at least implies it to those guys before he tells us. I don't remember there being, I can't remember any grand like proclamation or announcement. I mean, think about it. We all knew Wimbush was the guy. We all knew Book was the guy when he became the guy.
You got to go back.
Kaiser Mazaire was a shit show. Like, right. I mean, there was no way to.
I remember that just like sort of spilled out in the Goog auditorium. It was almost like he had just been worn down by our questions about it. He was like, fine, we'll just play both of them.
And everyone was like, sure. Oh, like,
great idea. Okay. No. I can't see them going back to that. But it's just like everything you hear about Jack Cohn and how he picks up the offense, how he can stretch the field vertically, which again, the references Brian Kelly has made to Jack Cohn's leadership, to his physical ability being even more than what they thought. Today he said arm strength and mobility both better than maybe what they thought would have shown on Wisconsin tape at all. It can only get you to Jack Cohn is the starting quarterback at Notre Dame. I mean, he talked about his experience on Saturday, what a factor that is. Well, if Jack Cohn has 18 starts and Drew Pine has zero, like I don't know how you could come to another decision just parsing out what Brian Kelly has said over the last week.
No, I don't either. The one part with Buckner, at least the one thing I noticed that was different about the offense when he was involved is there were more, I wouldn't even call them design runs, but they ran the ball more with the quarterback then, which our friend Tim Priester had asked Brian Kelly about this afterward. Like, are you ready to prepare a package, a run quarterback running package specific to him yet? Is that something that could be on the table this season? And Brian Kelly didn't sound comfortable going there just yet. I mean, especially with a true freshman, it sounded like that's something that he could certainly play down the line. But he wasn't ready to go there just yet. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's just you do wonder, like, what would change between now and the beginning of next week as far as, like, all right, he's our guy. We got it settled now.
Yeah.
But I still believe that this has largely been talked about, or at the very least understood. I mean, you bring in a grad transfer, it's understood what he's here to do. And by all accounts, he has done nothing to screw up since he got to Notre Dame. So I naturally assume that he'll be the starting quarterback. Captains as well are coming, I guess, to Eastern time on Friday. It sounds like
yes. That
was a social media kind
you,
of
you got to get
thing.
Your videos together.
Yeah.
I mean, if it doesn't happen, if you don't have a social media hit for it. But yeah, it's, I mean, in, to, you know, in all seriousness, I would assume that Myron Tagovailoa most would be one of the captains.
That did cross my mind.
So, I mean, you have to be respectful of that as well. But, like, you know, him, beyond that, you know, probably Kurt Heinisch, Kyle Hamilton.
Cohn, maybe?
Cohn would be a surprise to me. You'd have Patterson and Kyron Williams, I think, on offense.
Yeah.
Before you would have Cohn. But
when's the last time you went that young with Kyron? I mean, a redshirt sophomore.
Yeah. I mean, he's only had one season of action. It just, again, it's one of those things where, like, the coaching staff values Kyron Williams' attitude and personality sure. So much in the locker room, you would think, like, that there is natural leadership there. So, I think there are a solid five or six. Cohn would be a surprise as a seventh, just because they don't usually go that well. Or, you know, if they did, like, a Lindsey or a Wilkins at receiver. But that
Avery Davis. I mean, he's quiet, but
in some ways, it's kind of a career achievement award for those guys. So, that will be on Friday afternoon. It's, you know, I asked Brian Kelly about leadership on Saturday, and, you know, I think he brought up Cohn. He sort of brought up how it's a pretty mature group, which, again, like, what else would he say? But I thought it was interesting when he compared and contrasted it to last year, where he said, you know, last year, with all the COVID distractions, they managed that very, very well, even with the shutdown. But then he referenced, like, this team, I don't know. Not saying that they would have handled it poorly, but he doesn't have the confidence that quite yet in terms of overcoming adversity and staying locked in. So that, I mean, that will be interesting. I do think it's not a team with dominant personalities at the top. I mean, there's no McGlinchey Nelson. There's no sort of Book Eichenberg.
Kyron's the only, off the top of my head.
Yeah.
And
he's a younger guy, right? Like, you know, even Dalen Hayes, while he didn't play a ton before his final year, was somebody that was well-respected.
Heinisch. I mean, you mentioned his captain, but that's another big personality that I think of.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's all part of it. It's just, I think this team is going to come together more slowly than the coaches probably would like in an ideal world. But that's just the nature of this roster. It turned over so much that they need all this time to develop it. I mean, it just feels like this is a team that needs to cook for a little bit longer.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
In that same vein, were you surprised to see them rank 7th in the preseason coaches poll?
Yes. I guess somebody has to be 7th. Why not Notre Dame? But this still feels kind of like a 10-2 maybe a 9-3, but more likely a 10-2 kind of team.
That's usually good enough for seventh.
About seventh. You know, we talked about this on our podcast probably the last 2 years. It's just like there's a three or four teams at the top, and then Notre Dame, like, who's to say they're not first in the second group? They're certainly still in the second group, but, you know, are they the 5th, 6th, 7th, or are they the 9th, 10th, 11th? Does it make a difference? I don't really know, but I was surprised that they were 7th.
I was surprised, and then I had to fill out my ballot for the FWA Super 16 preseason poll this week, and I put them 7th. Like, it wasn't like – it was a subconscious decision of, like, all right, I have so-and-so at 6, I have to have someone at 7, and – I mean, honestly, I could have made a compelling argument for Notre Dame to be even higher than that when you actually look at, you know, the other options there. I mean, I know their polls, like, especially now in the playoff era, like, they're good for nothing other than getting people mad and having us argue about things. But in order for someone not to be 7, someone else has to be in that place. And I can't make a compelling case right now for a whole lot of teams other than Notre Dame in that spot right now. So I was surprised when I saw it, but as always, when you actually sit down and look at it, it starts to make sense. Did you want to add to that?
No, it's just like you got what, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, Georgia.
Yeah. And A&M, I think. A&M was 6th in the coaches.
Right, and then, I mean, they have their own turnover issues at A&M, right? Like, after those five, LSU, Notre Dame, A&M,
Florida,
Penn State.
I had Wisconsin, Cincinnati pretty high.
Yeah.
Iowa State, I think, was top 10 this year, which, look, they got everyone coming back. I get it. I think expectations are a little high for that place, and not that we've ever been guilty of that on this podcast, but did not mean to go down that road. We were just talking about top 10, but you can't rank, like, yeah, you can't. Some of those teams you just can't rank over Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Look what Florida showed with what their roster is probably going to be this year in the Sugar Bowl last year against Oklahoma.
Yeah, like, at some point, there has to be value in a team figuring out how to win games.
Right.
Like, Notre Dame has figured that out, and the other schools that, you know, were rattling off here, A&M maybe figured it out last year. Florida, if you lose a game by throwing a shoe, I would say that you have not figured it out.
That too, yeah.
Yeah. Well, so it's, you know, Notre Dame doesn't beat itself anymore. And even if they're not a playoff, I guess you have to say they're a playoff contender if they're 7th, but, like, not a team that I would put in my 4, but still, they're also not a team that's going to go out and screw up their own opportunity. If they get beat, it's because they just weren't good enough, opposed to them making mistakes and that dragging the whole operation down.
Right, and if they were in a conference, like, you could still throw them out there as a playoff. Like, you wouldn't sound crazy right now by saying, yeah, I think this could be a playoff team by the end of the year. I just think the nature of independence, you got to go.
What if they were in the ACC on the other and the opposite side from Clemson? I would have no problem putting them in the ACC championship game. Right?
In the Coastal? Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of teams not in the Coastal. Yeah. I think we go there from day one and be number one. Yeah, they're playing the best one of them this year.
Yeah, I mean, they have North Carolina coming here, and Notre Dame will be favored in that game. So I think it's reasonable. It's just like, I'm sure you do a lot of these too. You do these radio hits or TV hits, and they ask you, like, oh, is Notre Dame going to take a step back this year? I'm like, well, yeah, they are going to take a step back.
They're going to lose a regular season game.
Probably all the way to 10-2.
Yeah. Which, what their final record last year, by the way.
Yeah. It's just like, this is the step back that Notre Dame is going to take, and that's okay. Like, I don't think anyone around Notre Dame sort of views themselves as, like, have to be Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, like, it's the playoff where your entire season should be flushed down the tubes. And, like, because, you know, we're out there watching practice, you can see it's not like they've got the next Kyle Hamilton, the next Michael Mayer running around on the roster. So it's not, I don't know if it's an overwhelmingly deep team. They've got a bunch of good players, but it's, I don't know, it just seems like a very good team that. Its ceiling is a very good team, and its floor is a very good team. It's just going to be very good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to put them in the category of Ohio State because Ohio State's coming off a better year, but, like, I was talking to someone, a coach in the Big Ten East this past week, and he said, I bet you every single team in our division is going to be better than we were last year except for Ohio State, and Ohio State's still going to be better than all of us. And
yeah.
I mean, you could say that about Notre Dame and their opponents this year. I mean, obviously, Wisconsin, North Carolina, these are some tough games, but you could easily talk yourself into them on an individual basis, winning every one of those games. I think eventually it'll catch up to you. But I think what the Vegas over-under now is 9 or 9? Last I saw it was 9. And if it's 9, I'm still betting over on that.
I would too.
You're not going to lose money.
Yeah, to me, like 9.5 is the appropriate line for Notre Dame just to create action on both sides of it. You know, I guess in terms of if there was a surprise today, this is kind of a deeper cut, but like, and Brian Kelly talked about this, Marcus Freeman talked about this. I think they're deeper and probably more talented at linebacker than I would have given them credit for when the season started. Whether it's, you know, Maris Leofau, Drew White, Bo Bauer, Jack Kaiser, J.D. Bertrand. To me, like, those are the five guys that, I don't know if they've separated themselves, but like, they could play and be comfortable playing any of those five. And then, you know, beyond that, whether it be Isaiah Pryor or Shane Simon, I'm not really, Paul Mall, I'm not really sure, but they seem like they have some more pieces. And again, it's like, are there any of those guys great future NFL guys? Probably not. But there's a lot of very good. Like, I think Notre Dame is blessed with a lot of very good players to support, like, the Hamilton, Mike Mayer types.
Yeah, I think among surprises, J.D. Bertrand, you mentioned, I mean, he was a guy who saw a lot of action with the ones today and who Brian Kelly really singled out as a guy who, like, hey, you know what? He's probably got to be more than just a special teams player for us. We got to get him on the field more, and Marcus Freeman is going to figure that out. I know there are so many questions about secondary coming in. Brian Kelly, I think, did his best, at least today, to try to alleviate those concerns. When he got asked for, quote-unquote, transformational rises on defense, I mean, I have the list here. Almost every single guy he said came from that, came from the secondary. I mean, Clarence Lewis's body, Tariq Bracey, you know, who he basically said was faking until he made it from a confidence level until this season. Riley Mills, obviously, up front. Kyle Hamilton, he said, had the best offseason that he's had it so far in Notre Dame. And Cam Hart, he threw in at the end as well. They can talk about that on their own podcast, but right here on the Shamrock, we're going to talk about them.
Yeah, I'm sure on the next episode of Inside the Garage, KJ Wallace will be like, what about me? the Kyle Hamilton being mentioned in that group was a bit odd because we don't think of transformations happening for players
who are all Americans. After the end of the season.
Yeah, it's true. He was hurt most of the season with the ankle and then had surgery and missed spring practice, so maybe there's something to that. But if Brian Kelly could pick, like, all right, I need four guys to have, like, monster off seasons and change the way I view them, the four he probably would have chosen would be Lewis and Hart. You know, Bracey maybe, and then, like, Lindsey offensively. Maybe Wilkins a little bit too. But, like, those guys on the outside, offensively or defensively, that's where Notre Dame needs to make the biggest jump. Maybe not for week one at Florida State, but the cornerback position is just, that's one spot where Notre Dame does not have college football playoff level ability. So can they develop it out of guys who are 3-star prospects? We shall see. But there's a lot that needs to be developed there.
I don't know if I go that harsh on the quarterback spot just yet. I mean, like, in a nutshell, yes. But again, like, Mac Jones, wasn't he a 3-star?
No,
like,
corner.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said quarterback. Yeah. I'm sorry. No, corner, yes, absolutely. Even in person, I still mishear him sometimes. I agree. Corner is the cause for concern coming into this season. I was talking to someone around the program a couple weeks ago who was talking up the secondary, and I said, why are you so confident? He said, well, I don't think we're going to be worse than we were last year, and Kyle Hamilton is going to be better. I thought, one way to look at it, I suppose.
That is interesting.
Brian Kelly used that term eraser again, which we keep hearing about Kyle Hamilton, but at some point, like, that's a 4 or 5-man group back there. You can't just have one guy clean up the mistakes of others. But, you know, from what we saw out of the first team today, I know it wasn't all from the corners. I mean, you know, the first team defense, I thought, had their way with the first team offense when they were lined up against each other today. And with all that experience you have up front, and again, you know, MTA was not up there today, but I just think there's enough experience around on that defense that could, you know, take a little bit of the pressure off those guys to you know, hide them a little bit. It's kind of like 2012 almost a little bit. They had a whole new starting secondary back then, and it didn't really rear its ugly head till, well, the title game.
But. Yeah, no, that's true. Because I'm trying to think through that season, like, until the USC game at the very end when they just threw at Kavari Russell, who was a freshman, and I think he was trying to guard Marquise Lee at the time.
They had, like, what, 9? Every pass interference penalty in the world.
Tackle him.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We've all sort of covered Notre Dame teams where, like, there are clear strengths, and this one has it. You know, I mentioned Mayer, Hamilton, Williams. Corner could be a weakness. Certainly, I thought it was coming into the season. The way Kelly described it today and what we saw today, maybe that's worth a different evaluation. Because when we saw the one-on-one portion of practice, which is tilted towards the receivers, Austin looked very mm-hmm. good. Lindsey looked very good. I'm not sure I would say that the corner room or the secondary looked that great at all in that drills, but like once the pieces fit together at the end of practice, you know, aside from Kevin Austin, I'm not sure that anyone was really out there making plays against the first team group.
What one very encouraging sign, at least for me, was Brian Kelly throwing out the Javon McKinley comparison for Kevin Austin. It was for Kevin Austin, right? I think. Because there's another question about Lindsey.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Austin is often separated out from the senior breakout story. It's more like the Wilkins, Lindsey guys who have been around right. and just like haven't all clicked for one reason or the other. Like Austin is to me his own thing. Houston Griffith would fit in the Javon McKinley group. Lindsey, Wilkins, those guys to me are much more Javon McKinley, Jonas Gray potentially. That's where that group, if they can click on those. And like they've had a very good hit rate on those. I mean, we got to sort of give Notre Dame some credit for the development where they're Asmar Bilal in 2019, Javon McKinley last year. Now they need it to be Lindsey, Wilkins, Griffith, TJ Brown, sort of. They sort of like can't afford that not to happen.
Yeah, and Dexter in 2018, if you want to keep going back, that was one that kind of came out of nowhere. Let me ask you this. Who on Notre Dame's schedule do you think could actually make them pay in those one-on-one situations? There are two teams that come to mind for me. But.
Yeah, it's USC and North Carolina. Yep. Like, because those are the matchups where they have the talent on the outside to win.
And the quarterbacks to get on the ball.
Like, and North Carolina is certainly not loaded at receiver like they were last year. But they couldn't protect Sam Howell at all against Notre Dame. But those are the kind of matchups to me. And like, look, Florida State is going to have some guys on the outside. Like, they just do. It's Florida. And if Mackenzie Milton is as good as what Florida State hopes that he is, like, he will be another one of those quarterbacks who can get the ball where it needs to go. So it's just like, to me, it's a matchups game. Like, is Notre Dame better than North Carolina? Is Notre Dame better than USC? Yeah, I think they're better than both. But like, if the matchups go bad and your quarterback position is struggling, like Marcus Freeman talked about this on Tuesday about like, we're going to play a lot of man. Well, they start hitting deep balls on us. Like, we got to find somebody else to put in there to play man. You're going to get beat. Like, Tariq Bracey has lived that. And they had somebody just as good or better in Clarence Lewis last year to take him out. I'm not sure who the next Clarence Lewis is. Like, is it Ramon Henderson? I mean, he did not do a lot today and like got a PI flag that I think Brian Kelly jumped on him a little bit for. But it's not a there's a talent question at corner, which I think maybe is I look at more favorably after today. But there's the depth question at corner, and that to me is sort of unchanged as a question.
Going through my notes, but it was Lindsey that he compared to McKinley. So okay. Apologies. Kevin Austin is his own separate entity, as you stated. With you on the corners, with you on the linebackers, because I think that's a deeper group than we thought it was, and we all know about the defensive line at this point. I just I came out today. This isn't a negative perception, but I definitely came out today with a lot more questions than answers, at least based on my preconceived notions coming in. Like, I don't know what I learned today, you know, seeing the first full Notre Dame practice I've seen. Well, either of us, I guess, probably have seen.
March 5th.
Yeah, the last time I saw you since then, but last time I was in town, like right before everything hit back in 2020, it was the one and only spring practice for Notre Dame. So
it was just like a weird practice in that way. And like, I just, we talked about this at the top of the show, like, Notre Dame just needs more time to figure out what Notre Dame is. And again, on August 12th, that's fine. On August 22nd, it's not. On August 31st, like, that's bad news. But for now, it's okay. It was just, like, usually we go into these open practices and you come away with, like, I learned A, B, C, and D.
Kyle Hamilton had three picks in practice one,
Or, like, this position is a disaster, or, wow, they're doing something new here. And, like, this felt just a lot more tempered and low-key in terms of any of that. Like, one of the guys who impressed me the most today was J.D. Bertrand, who's probably a backup middle linebacker. Like, that's not a really hot practice observation, but that was kind of what passed for. Like, Logan Diggs was really good today. He's probably the fourth running back. That's not going to make a difference in the fall. So, I think Notre Dame has a lot of work still to get done here. And that's, again, it's okay, but you definitely would not come out of today's practice saying, like, I know what Notre Dame football is going to be in 2021, because I'm not sure we saw a whole lot of it today.
Agree completely, and I think one of the first things Brian Kelly said, that, to your point, it's like, we haven't faced any adversity. Like, these guys just don't know yet, which means we don't know about them. Last year, you had a veteran group, you had the offseason from hell that everybody had to go through, but you came out of that in one piece and felt really good about the direction and leadership of that team. And so it'll be interesting with, you know, whomever the captains are, and we have a good idea of, you know, who will make up that group come Friday. What's their leadership style? How do they go about leading? I think Notre Dame has had it really, really good in that department, really since 2016, that you kind of take for granted just how much that matters. If you have a locker room that completes itself, and you have guys who are going to get in other guys' faces and enforce it, that's going to matter. I mean,
And I think one aspect of that, like the 2016 group, I think the captains were like Isaac Rochelle, James Onuwalu, Torrey Hunter,
and McGlinchey.
And to me, it wasn't necessarily like they had bad captains that year. They had bad followers. Like, it wasn't a good locker room in terms of, like, following.
They had no quarterback. Yeah. I mean, they had two quarterbacks, whatever. Like, you have two, you have none. Like,
they didn't have a locker room that could take direction and follow. That's not the case anymore. Like, I was talking to the player of a parent driving out of practice, and he was saying, like, his son was imparting to him, like, his son plays a really competitive position where they could play five or six guys. And he said, there's not any, like, backbiting, no, like, internal rivalries. Like, the entire position group really gets along. I don't think we would have said that in 2016. The captains on this team might not be demonstrative or like big personalities, but I just think that it's a roster from 1 to 85 that like knows how to take direction now. And that will sort of solve the leadership problem, because like if you have good leaders, great. If you have good followers, then like that sort of completes itself, like you said. So I feel like that's, this team will deal with adversity. We don't really know how they're going to respond to it, as Brian Kelly referenced, but it should be in a situation where, like, there's enough people who have played football and seen it that they should be able to get to the other side of it. Even if those players played football somewhere else, like Jack Cohn and Kay Madden, or you're like Braden Lindsay and Kevin Austin, you just had to really watch for the last 2-3 years. You should know how it's done.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the defining anecdote that I'll remember from 2016 is talking to someone in the program who said, Matt, look at, like, I love all of our players. I love all of our leaders to death. And this statement didn't completely hold up well because Mike McGlinchey obviously became a much bigger presence in the locker room. He goes, look at our captains. Each one is quieter than the next. He goes, last year, Joe Schmidt pulled everyone aside at the end of a random training camp practice and said, oh, I want all of you to pledge right now. We're not going to go out on Thursday nights this year because we got a special team. We're not going to screw it up by socializing. And, like, that's just something that just comes from within that – you either have or you don't. And I'm sure there are people like that on this roster. We just haven't seen them in the public eye yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly, you knew Joe Schmidt would have said that before he said it. I'm not, like, if I had said player X gave that same speech, I'm not sure who I would have guessed. You know, that is a difference. Like, at some point, you can't just follow. You have to have guys who lead. And I'm not sure who that dominant personality is yet. I wonder if that will be something that shows a little bit over the course of the next three and a half weeks.
Yeah, Kyron and Kurt are the two I keep coming back to. At least to the public eye, really jump out at me. You can notice that.
I wonder, watch them on TV. But doesn't like Kurt want to go out on Thursday nights? Like, But yeah, it's just like, it's those guys, I think, are, yeah, they are big personalities. So you, like, I don't know, you just got to figure out a different way to do that. If you're going to sort of drag people along and get people sort of like locked in a different way, that I'm not really sure where you go with that.
No, me neither. That's one of many important. I won't say it's not important because it's very important, but that's one of like several questions I think we still have to learn about this team in the next couple of weeks. They have, what, two or three more full practices open to us?
One more full practice. Okay, and then I believe there's three more where we get sort of a 30-minute viewing. So you sort of take attendance and then get out of there. You know, we get Marcus Freeman again next week, I believe, and we get Tommy Rees twice. So it's like we'll be around them quite a bit. Like, for how much they don't try to give away a lot in interviews, you do get a sense of like what feels good to them and what doesn't. You know, Marcus, you could tell on Tuesday, was like, the linebackers group feels good to me. Corner, we'll see. So there's just a lot more development that has to happen between now and by the time they go down to Florida State. That is totally okay. But as Brian Kelly referenced last weekend, he's had teams where, all right, we get one training camp practice, no problem. You know, in the same way, they got one spring practice, no problem. They figure out how to make it work. I'm not sure that they could just snap their fingers and make it work with this group.
I'm not either. Although he just projects so much more confidence. Maybe it's a product of this being his 12th rodeo here, but
yeah.
He just seems so much in such a good place, so much more calm and ready to handle whatever may come his way with this group, which we're still trying to figure out. But
I think he's still trying to figure that out.
I think we all are.
But, yeah.
I think we will be able to talk about starting quarterback Jack Cohn next time we record. Probably.
Yes. Yes. I think if we can't, something has gone awry because that a announcement not happening before our next podcast would not qualify as really, really soon, as Brian Kelly had referenced with the starting quarterback. So it's, they will move forward. And I do think that's like, in some ways, the questions that we thought were going to get answered today probably will get answered on Thursday, in addition to other questions that may have come up today. So that's it. I feel like the next practice is kind of, that will be sort of the end of quote unquote training camp. Like mm-hmm. The school year will be starting. You have to get some stuff answered. I just thought that more of it would have been answered by today, in the sense that, like, Marcus Freeman even mentioned this on Tuesday. It's like, practice five, we're not splitting reps over here. Like, if you can play, you're in. If you can't, you're not. So those decisions will have to be made a little bit more. And I think we'll sort of see them in terms of who's working where and how much next week.
Looking forward to it. I will probably see your beautiful face on the other end of a Zoom screen next time we do this. Although I'll be back here next week at least one day. So maybe if they announce it on Tuesday, we can come back here. If you're wonderful. Missing family will allow us to
get back. A big shout out to my mom for watching my daughter and our neighbor Chad for watching my son, both avid Shamrock listeners. So your takeaway should be, if you listen to this podcast, I will trust my kids to.
There you go. And I get to see the Sinatra album. I guess I don't want to spoil it. This is, no one sees us when we record this, but Pete has a very cool background and get a chance to actually see his Frank Sinatra framed album cover collection up close. Warms my Italian heart.
Excellent. Well, that's it for this episode of the Shamrock following Notre Dame's open practice. We'll be back next week. Should have a starting quarterback to talk about. Should have captains to talk about. You know, we'll see if maybe there's a starting offensive line to talk about by then. But as we were saying at the top, Notre Dame's got a ton of questions to answer. And for now, they still have a ton of time to get there. But should be a very eventful August for Notre Dame, and we will be covering it here on The Athletic as well as The Shamrock. So we will talk to you next week.